The practical requirements that enmesh men at every moment, the pragmatic rationality of the industrial era, completely absorb the lives of their victims. Pain is the archetype of labor in a divided society and at the same time its organon. Philosophers and theologians have always exalted it. Their paeans to it reflect the fact that mankind is hitherto known labor only as an effluence of domination. They justify pain because it drives men to reason. Luther translates the 90th Psalm as, "Teach us to learn, we must die in order to become prudent." Kant says that pain is the sting of activity. Footnote 16, text. And Voltaire that this feeling of pain was indispensable to stimulate us to self-preservation. Footnote 17, text. The inquisitors once justified their abominable service to their predator rulers by saying that they were commissioned to save the errant soul or to wash out its sins. Their language already pictures heaven as a kind of third Reich, which the unreliable and scandalous could attain by way of a training camp. If one of these unhappy victims of the Inquisition escaped, requests were issued for this extradition describing him as one insanely led to reject the solitary medicine offered for his cure and to spurn the wine and oil which were soothing to his wounds. Footnote 18, text. The Inquisition manifested the rage of those who sensed that the inculcation of Christianity had not quite successfully been accomplished, a rage which later in fascism led to open repudiation of Christianity. Fascism has reinstated pain on its throne. During the breathing spell of civilization, at least in the civilized mother countries, brute physical pain was inflicted only upon the abjectly poor. To others, it loomed on the horizon only as the ultima ratio of society. Under fascism, society has invoked this ultima ratio. The contradiction between what is requested of man and what can be offered to him has become so striking, the ideology so thin, the discontents in civilization so great that they must be compensated through annihilation of those who do not conform, political enemies, Jews, a social persons, the insane. The new order of fascism is reason revealing itself as unreason. Page 47. What remains of reason in its contemporary decline, however, is not just the preservance of self-preservation and the persistence of that horror in which it culminates. The age-old definition of reason in terms of self-preservation already implied the curtailment of reason itself. The proposition of idealistic philosophy that reason distinguishes man from the animal, propositions in which the animal is humiliated, just as man is in the converse of propositions of the materialist doctors, contain the truth that through reason man frees himself of the fetters of nature. This liberation, however, does not entitle men to dominate nature, as the philosophers held, but to comprehend it. Society, governed by the self-preservation rationality of elites, has always also preserved the life of the masses, also in a wrong and accidental form. Reason has borne a true relation not only to one's own existence, but to living as such. This function of transcending self-preservation is concomitant with self-preservation, with obeying and adapting to objective ends. Reason could recognize and denounce the forms of injustice and thus emancipate itself from them. As the faculty of calling things by their name, reason is more than alienated life that preserves itself in the destruction of others and of itself. To be sure, reason cannot hope to keep aloof from history and to intuit the true order of things as ontological ideologies contend. In the inferno to which triumphant reason has reduced the world, it loses its illusions. But in doing so, it becomes capable of facing this inferno and recognizing it for what it is. Skepticism has done its job. Ideals seem too futile today that they can change as rapidly as agreement and alliances do. Ideology consists more in what men are like than in what they believe. In their mental constrictness, their complete dependence upon associations, they experience everything only within the conventional framework of concepts. Any object is comprised under the accepted schemata even before it is perceived. This, and not the convictions of men, constitutes the false consciousness of today. Today, the ideological incorporation of men into society takes place through their biological preformation for the controlled collectivity. Even the unique becomes a function and appendage of the centralized economy, culture exalting the unique as the restive element amid a universal sameness of things as an ingredient rather than an opponent of mass culture. The unique becomes the shingle of monopoly. The essence of Paris and of Austria had become merely a function of that America from which they differed. The self in dissolution becomes recognizable as ideology. It was not only the basis of modern self-preservation, but also the veil concealing the forces that destroyed it. Page 48. What applies to the unique equally applies to the living self. With the dissolution of the self, the disproportionate reaches of power become the only obstacle to insight into their obsolescence. Mutilated as men are, in the duration of a brief moment, they can become aware that in the world which has been thoroughly rationalized, they can dispense with the interest of self-preservation, which still set them one against the other. The terror which pushes reason is at the same time the last means of stopping it, so close has truth come. If the atomized and disintegrating men of today have become capable of living without property, without location, without time, they also have abandoned the ego in which all prudence and all stupidity of historical reason, as well as its compliance with domination, was sustained. The progress of reason that leads to its self-destruction has come to an end. There is nothing left but barbarism or freedom.